AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Hey, welcome into Texans on Tap. I'm Brandon Strange alongside Charlie Pulillo, Josh Jordan. You can follow them on X at Pulillo and at Josh Jordan SCS. Charlie, Josh, welcome in. Welcome in to everyone who's joining us live. Get your comments in. We'll try to feature some of them on the screen. Gents, we anticipated a defensive slugfest, and we definitely got one guaranteed courtesy of a CJ Stroud concussion. The good news was, even though any hopes of salvaging any meaning for the season was flushed away in this game, we did get to see the McNairs give themselves another award, and I think that's what we're all really watching for here. 26 years into the franchise's existence, and there's as many McNairs as there are players in the Ring of Honor. So I think that pretty much tells you everything you need to know about the direction of the franchise since its inaugural season. In all seriousness, no, like, we do need to start with the hit on CJ. That looked pretty ugly. The flag ultimately got picked up on it. Gents, Charlie, let's start with you. What did you see on that CJ play?
Someone's cranky for this edition of Texans on Tap.
Yep.
Okay, the fundamental difference, Azeez Elshire's dirty hit last season against Trevor Lawrence was a blow to the head. Stroud got hit flush in the chest. It was not a helmet-to-helmet hit. And then if you get the head cracked back and you get concussed, but a quarterback loses quarterback protection when he is a runner. You're not a defenseless receiver or a porcelain vase protected quarterback in the pocket. The distinction, the Elshire hit versus Lawrence last season, blow to the head. This hit was clearly below the head and the neck. You know, we've talked the last couple of weeks how the Texans, because of their offensive limitations, needed CJ Stroud to make some plays with his legs. Therein lies the risk. Quarterback, especially in open space, he takes the kill shot. And Davis Mills is actually okay as a backup quarterback, because how many teams in the NFL have backups that you're saying, hey, he's really good, he's starter worthy? He wasn't all that scattershot, missed a couple of balls, but look, Bo Nix was all over the field today for the Broncos, and he is their starter. But the second half, schematics, protection, the quarterback, the running game, again, a joke. It can't all just be explained by, oh, they lost C.J. Stroud or they'd have won the game. Remember, the Broncos' defense was out without the reigning defensive player of the year in Patrick Surtain in this one. Nico Collins, 7 catches, 75 yards in the first half. 0 in the second half. Not one time. Mills did have one bad miss of Nico, an even worse one to Christian Kirk. But it's not that Mills was just habitually terrible in this game. The Texans' offense was habitually terrible, and it wasn't off to a great start with Stroud. Right, the first drive picked up a couple of first downs, and then Fairbairn misses a 51-yard field goal. The second possession, they were 1-2-3 and out. Right, the play that Stroud got knocked out on, the Texans were punting on the very next play. Anyway, so an offensive fiasco. Yes, the Broncos have a good defense, but as we're into the holiday season, the Texans in the second half, the Rockettes, baby, 1-2-3, kick, 6 possessions. 5-3 and outs. And in the first half, if not blessed with field position, they basically would never have scored. 2 of their field goal drives started in Denver territory. 2 of the others started outside the Texans' own 40-yard line. It's not as if the Broncos' offense was very good in this game. The Texans' defense played with great honor until buckling on the decisive drive of the game and the earlier drive and the 2-point conversion that tied it. So the Texans decapitulated in money time, but overall their defense is very good. The offense is sorry. And you know what? Roof closed on a perfect day. Maybe they should have opened it so the 40% of the crowd that was Broncos fans, their noise would have gone up into the ether. Such overrated BS that the home field advantage is enhanced by the translucent roof being closed. Organizationally, the Texans deserve to lose for having the roof closed on a 72 degree low humidity day. Guess you're not the only cranky one, Brandon.
I'm wondering,
have at it, Josh.
Are they able to open it? I know they had that hurricane damage to the roof of the stadium, so I'm just not aware if it's functional right now. So I just don't know that. But I will say, I kind of have to disagree with you on Mills, Charlie. All my notes, I just have awful throw for Mills, awful throw for Mills. It is all over the place. Threw that hospital ball to Nico Collins, it almost got him killed early in the game. Threw that ball into double coverage that should have been a pick to Nico down the field. He threw one pass that like three Broncos players batted to the ground. He was absolutely terrible, but it wasn't just him. The whole offense stinks. Nick Caley needs to be fired. They are, I think, 31st as a red zone offense in the NFL. They are terrible. Nick Caley, I mean, every play is just run up the middle. That's all your creativity around the end zone is to just, and let's put it this way, Jake Andrews, and then you have Laken Tomlinson, two of the worst players at their positions in football, and our best bet to get a touchdown is to run behind those guys over and over again. Also, you know, you have a pass rush that you're worried about, maybe some check downs, throw the ball to the running back. You know how many catches Woody Marks had today? Zero. And why is Dari Ogunbowale on money down? He plays pretty much every third down, one of your most unathletic players. When you need to get a few yards, he had a chance late in the game to shake a guy. Couldn't do it because he can't shake anybody. He has no juice. I don't know what they're doing. They just like him. And I think that the media pushback about his usage made them double down and use him even more. I mean, it's inexcusable. And I mean, the defense can't do everything. Special teams actually played pretty well today outside of Fairbairn almost missing three field goals today. But overall, it was the quarterback play was awful. You were down there. You had chances to score touchdowns. No creativity. You just keep – even the announcers, once again, are just laughing at the Texans like, wow, they just keep trying to run into the teeth of that defense. People are just scratching their heads wondering what the hell they're doing. So – I think they got to move on. Nobody can call a worse game than Nick Caley is right now. Let anybody else take a shot.
So the sequence in the first half to which you alluded, Josh, do we think they were going to run it again up the middle on the fourth and one after fail again the first three downs? The Texans up trying to prove it's manhood? They have no manhood. They can't knock anybody off the ball. Maybe Ariante Ursery said, to hell with this. I'm just going to false start so we get the 3 points.
Yeah, and as ugly as the CJ hit was, everything from the offense that followed was equally disgusting, and not disgusting in that cool way when you go, oh, man, that's disgusting. Disgusting as in Davis Mills as a quarterback is the perfect encapsulation of the Nick Cassiero era. Not good, not awful, not a threat to do anything of any real substance. Nick Caley has no feel for the game. Davis Mills has no feel for rushers, pass rushers. Just in the difference was when Bo Nix had the opportunity, he was able to scramble. If you gave that same hole to Davis Mills, he'd still be trying to get out of the box because that's how slow he is. Even when he jumps up in the air, which why are you jumping in the air? Almost fumbled trying to jump over a pass rusher. Like even when he jumps up in the air, everything looks like it's in slow motion. Now it's not on Davis Mills because Davis Mills is your QB2. Obviously you don't expect to lose your QB1, but I would disagree that he's a perfectly fine backup. I think he exhibited today that he's not a perfectly fine backup. He had guys that were open, missed him. I mean, I think that's why he's not a QB1 anywhere. I just don't know why this is the – I don't know why we're still talking about Davis Mills, quite frankly. You could like have anyone as backup quarterback, and they would be just as productive because he's not productive. Like, what does he do for you? I just don't know what he brings. And I'm sure we're going to get more defensiveness from D'Amico and the coaching staff because they're going to question what they're doing. But I don't know what they're doing. I can't pretend that I know as much football about as D'Amico does. But to you guys' point, how many times are you going to go at the goal line, at the 1 yard line, A gap, A gap, A gap? Like, you're not built like that. That's not who you are as a team. And that's why I say Nick Caley doesn't seem to have a feel for the game. He doesn't have a feel for who his personnel is on this team. And it just really makes you wonder, like, who does he think he's coaching here?
I don't know, but their weakest point is the interior of the offensive line with Andrews at center and Tomlinson at left guard. And Ursary's having the rookie struggles at left tackle. They do appear to be a rudderless ship. Cringe if you'd like. You know, they extended Davis Mills through through next season. Hey, Justin Fields, until hurt, was a starter in this league. But we know the Colts, despite a loss Sunday to the Steelers, they're 7-2 with Daniel Jones. I've coached him, I guess, up enough to get some productivity out of him. But we can also circle back to the Texans' run game. Just remains inept. Chubb runs hard, but there's basically no burst there. Marks is a little guy. Unless he gets some space, there's not going to be much that comes out of that. Xavier Hutchinson's caught a few balls, but two costly penalties from him in the game, holding calls. I mean, offensively, you know, at least watching paint dry, grass grows, just boring. It doesn't make you want to smash your head against a wall. So at 3-5, they're actually not yet a corpse. The patient appears to be terminal, especially if Stroud's going to be in protocol for a week. But for the same reason, they're probably going to wind up with a losing record. It's why they're still alive. The Jaguars next week, if they win that game, you gain ground, get a split of the season series, and then they have two shots at the Colts. But more likely than anything else, at best, you split with the Colts. You see what you do with the Jaguars. They also still have the Bills here, at the Chiefs, at the Chargers. So D'Amico can spin and be critical of critical coverage. The Texans are not a good football team, which is somewhat a misnomer because the defense overall is a fabulous unit. But it's about the football team. And this team is as strong as its weakest link. And the offense is very, very weak. And they continue to have a perfect record in one-score games. They've lost them all this season. So anyone who wants to put up nonsense about, well, you know, they're three plays away from being 6-2. Yeah, well, then the last two seasons, they were 3-4 plays away from being 6-11, 5-12. You are what your record says you are. The Texans are 3-5. Injuries notwithstanding, because they deserve to be 3-5.
Yeah, and with, you know, the next week's game, who knows if CJ Stroud's going to be available. If he's not, I don't give them much of a chance with Davis Mills in there. Like, you know, Mac Jones is a backup quarterback that the Texans just faced last week. Sure, he struggled against the Texans defense, because pretty much everybody struggles against the Texans defense when they're in Houston. So I'd rather have him. Of course, he's got Kyle Shanahan calling the plays. I think that has a huge part to do with it, because Shanahan could do something with the backup quarterback. I don't think Nick Caley can do anything with a Pro Bowl type quarterback. So that's an issue. And then for me, what really summed up the game was once it got tied 15-15, Texans get the ball back, make a couple plays to Dalton Schultz to get to midfield. So you're thinking, all right, maybe we got something cooking. And then that's when Mills throws that bad ball to Nico into double coverage that was almost picked. He follows that up with a delay of game. And then you have an illegal shift from Christian Kirk. And then Mills misses a wide open Christian Kirk. And then they have to punt the ball. So it's just, you know, and that's it. That was the money time of the game. It was tied. That's when they had a chance to they were in striking distance to put some points on the board and then just shoot themselves in the foot. Just guy up, you know, Christian Kirk a couple times, Mills a couple times. It's just, that sums up where the Texans are this year.
Yeah. Nico had a step on that deep ball, but Mills just doesn't have enough arm and he was late with throw. Similar to Bo Nix. Bullock's interception, Sutton had a step. He beat the initial coverage man, but the safety had time to get over it and make the play. Hey, Sean Payton, outstanding offensive coach, quarterback coach, and he has going with the Broncos now at 7-2. What a race in the AFC West. But I might recommend he stops having Bo Nix throw on the run, because he doesn't have enough oomph behind the balls, and the Texans had multiple opportunities. I don't know if you flat out score that. A drop, the play you talked about earlier, Josh, where Stingley, who's so good playing the ball but wasn't able to hold on to that one. But general rule in the NFL, if you give up 18 points, you're supposed to win. But when all you can muster is five field goals, and again, multiple of those, you were set up by special teams or turnovers. This is like Texans football circa 2004.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out, a lot of people were saying over the last few weeks, you know, when the offense was, you know, not performing very well, a lot of people were like, I'm kind of curious what Davis Mills would look like in there. And you got to see that today and be reminded that you remember what football looked like before the Texans drafted CJ Stroud. You got a good look at that today.
The late Dennis Green. He is who we thought he is. Adapting his famed rant after an Arizona Cardinals loss years ago.
And you know, I think that's when you say he is who we thought he is, I think that's why Davis Mills is the perfect encapsulation. He's the perfect symbol of the Nick Caserio regime, because he too is also who we thought he was. There was a lot of skepticism when Nick came in because of how he got brought in, because of the whole Jack Easterby fiasco, the fact that the consulting agency gave them a list of other names that didn't have, that were not Nick Caserio. Nick got hired anyway because of Jack Easterby intervening. And so you thought, okay, like, you know, we'll see, like, the guy has experience with a good organization, like some missteps, but then they finally purge Easterby out of the organization, and then they draft CJ Stroud. And you think, okay, well, we're headed in the right direction here with this team. And then it's just been, after a couple of good years with D'Amico at the helm, it's just, they don't know how to put an offense in place. The defense is great. I think that's credit to D'Amico. But I think that the offense is just really bad. But let's talk about the defense, because the defense did do enough to win. You hold the Broncos to 18. The final three coming in the final, you know, half minute of the game. You should be able to win that game. It was that Bo Nix scramble that obviously broke the back of the defense finally. But I think what ultimately broke their back was something that I was concerned about coming into the game, which was the offense being able to stay on the field long enough for the defense to be able to catch their breath. And they did a pretty good job of that through the first. In fact, they did a very good job in the first half of kind of dominating the time of possession. But in the second half, it really felt like Davis Mills and Nick Caley, especially in the fourth quarter, it felt like Caley and Mills were operating as if they were being charged by the hour on the field. It was three and out, three and out, three and out. With a few exceptions. What did you guys see out of the defense? And, it's hard to really hold them accountable, even though ultimately they did give up the game-winning field goal.
Well, hey, the Broncos were three and out on four of their second half possessions. So I'm not giving the Texans D a pass on fatigue. Henry Toto just got roasted on the wheel route. RJ Harvey for the touchdown that got them within two. And then Nix, who was not a marksman in the game, but a great throw, great catch on the tying two-point conversion. And then the Broncos get the ball at their 36-yard line with 50 seconds left. And they flush receivers downfield. I mean, the Texans don't play pure man coverage, but if you're in combo man zone, no one has the quarterback accounted for. I mean, Nix had just acres of space to gain the 25 yards to get them into instant field goal range. But look, in Seattle, the defense gave the Texans a +3 in the turnover margin, lost that game against the Broncos. Now, one of them was the special teams muff, but they were a +2, right? The Texans didn't give the ball away in the game, and they managed to lose that one anyway. And so much for the invulnerability of the Texans at home at NRG Stadium in the afternoons.
Yeah, and Derek Stingley continuing to struggle a little bit, gave up that touchdown to Cortland Sutton, though I will say it was a great throw. It was also a beautiful route, the way Sutton set him up. He did a really good job of creating that little bit of space where that football could be, you know, thrown in there. And Charlie hit it toe-to-toe, just had no chance, stopped moving his feet against a guy like RJ Harvey that's way faster than him. And that was just easy money. And we saw that a lot. That was working for them, throwing the ball to RJ Harvey on early downs just to get some yards. That seemed to be working for them. So that made a big difference. I feel bad for Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter. You know, Anderson had another sack, but yet another game with no sack for Hunter. I thought Kamari Lassiter played a really good game. So it's tough. A lot of those guys played well. It just wasn't enough. And unfortunately, they don't play on offense. I think you might have some better results. You might want to get Stingley out there. Maybe you can put some points on the board. But, I mean, you had Nico back this week. You had Christian Kirk back this week, and it didn't seem to matter that much. I know CJ was out, but there were opportunities. But guys were being overthrown, and the protection was bad again.
We have a commenter that says we would have won with CJ. Do you guys buy that? Do you guys buy that CJ was the difference? I mean, this was the same offense that we saw them. Again, we were talking before we went on live here it was A gap at the 1 yard line. CJ can't necessarily call the plays. Now, granted, CJ doesn't look like he's wearing cement shoes when he plays football in this way that Davis Mills does, but was CJ the difference in this game?
It's an easy assumption to make. You lose at the gun and you lost your starting quarterback in the first quarter of the game, but perhaps the Broncos attack differently defensively. They had 4 first half sacks, no more in the second half. Maybe they felt they didn't need to do some more exotic things they might have tried had C.J. Stroud in there. And C.J. Stroud's not the reigning offensive player of the year. Patrick Surtain is the reigning defensive player of the year, and he didn't play in the game. So, hey, durability is part of it. C.J. Stroud got laid out on a non-dirty hit, an awful break, and you hope C.J.'s okay going through the protocol. But I just think it's simplistic to say, oh, yeah, of course the Texans would have won the game. It's not an unreasonable assertion, but it darn sure is a fact. And in the end, it's immaterial.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if I had to guess, yeah, I think CJ makes an extra play or two and they win that football game. But, you know, there are also injuries. The Texans really banged up in this one. Titus Howard got knocked out with a concussion. So you lose your right tackle. You have to bring Fisher in. Texans had a lot of success with that jumbo package with Fisher as your extra offensive lineman. Well, now he has to go in and be your starting right tackle. So they had to make some adjustments during the day, and it just obviously wasn't enough.
Yeah, they lost Ed Ingram with the knee.
He came back, though, but yeah, he missed some time.
Yeah, he was out for a few plays. Same deal with what's the big guy's name? Allen, who went down for a few plays after getting clipped. I look at this team and they do look rudderless. I don't know what is really left to play for other than a miraculous comeback from this team and a miraculous nosedive from the other teams in the division here. But I if you guys had to guess here, like, I mean, what is it going to take for another change? I just can't imagine after replacing their offensive play caller, their offensive coordinator over the offseason. I just can't imagine that this team wants to go through the optics of having to make that change again. But at what point is it the lesser of two evils to have to, you know, bite the bullet, make another change there versus trying to, maintain one's dignity and have a bad play caller?
Well, if it's going to be one and done for Kelly, which would absolutely be the prevailing sentiment, I'm sure, it's on D'Amico. And if he goes with a third non-grown-up offensive coordinator, someone who's never called plays, really run an offense before in the NFL, and that doesn't work, then D'Amico should be fired, right? You're the general. If you're bringing in crappy colonels and lieutenants and they're costing you battles, in the end, the general would have to go. And then I don't know if that makes Caserio a brigadier general, but the offensive line, if you're going to continue to stock it with failed draft choices or marginalia acquired in free agency, that every season you're going to have multiple starters who might start for a handful of other teams around the NFL, and that's it. Football cliche number one is probably it all begins in the trenches. And the Texans' offensive line side of that trench has just been habitually poor under Nick Caserio. And I'd love to hear his explanation for it or his acknowledgement that, yeah, 4 years in a row, I took a first or second round pick, fail in the offensive line. Ursary, work in progress. But we're talking Kenyon Green and Juice Scruggs. And okay, Blake Fisher is the tight end in the jumbo package that they used every first down in the first quarter, and then he had to wind up playing, and the offense did nothing the rest of the game. That could not be more directly on Caserio, who's in his fifth season. Man, I think unless the Texans look like they just absolutely quit on D'Amico, he's back for another season. Good first year. All right, second year. If year three is a big step back, than Casario and Ryan's, it's fair to have a lot of heat on both going into 2026. And that's operating under a presumption. I don't know if it's the case that Casario would be back for season six. But Cal McNair, whoever else is paying attention, needs to tell Nick Casario, why have you been such an egregious failure when it comes to assembling an offensive line here?
Well, and look how they tried to fix it. You go out and get Laken Tomlinson, who was bad last year. And then they tell you like, oh, well, we're going to coach these guys up. We're getting tons of out of here, and we're going to promote our assistant offensive line coach, who was here last year when the offensive line sucked too. So, we're just going to be coached up better. Well, you don't have the talent, clearly, and your coaching's not very good. Nick Caley looks lost. He looks like a terrible play caller. So that's Nick Casario getting talent on the roster and getting coaches in here that have experience that can produce something. And he's whiffed on all those things. And I didn't understand the logic. Tomlinson was a declining player that wasn't good last year. You heard all the Seattle fans when they played the Seahawks being like, oh yeah, we can't wait to see Tomlinson out there. We're going to take advantage of that guy. So I think a lot of it is just ego and obviously having blind spots to certain positions that Casario's just not good at drafting. But they laugh when people had, you know, concerns about the offensive line. You know, the national media was like, oh, the Texans had a bad line last year, and then they traded away their best lineman. They're going to be terrible on the offensive line. And I think we all maybe kind of fooled ourselves a little bit thinking that just a new coach and some new bodies in here might bring a new result. But if you don't bring in good football players that are being coached up, it's not going to improve.
Hey, minus the great Trey Hendrickson, I'm not saying the Bengals defense is all that, but the Chicago Bears, who had Caleb Williams running for his life as a rookie, they went out and they signed three bona fide, above average starting offensive linemen. The Bears are a winning team in the playoff hunt, put 47 points on the board Sunday in Cincinnati. A general manager, at least in O-line construction, who's competent. Nick Casario has been utterly incompetent in that specific area, and it's an important one.
Yeah, and when you're talking about an ineffective line as far as being able to execute, that's you know, when we're talking about plays. But boy, so many times, like how many times they go up there and they have no time to hike the ball, like delay when Mills was in, just like he had no like feel for like where he was at in the play clock. Don't trip over that word. The false starts at inopportune times, holds. Now, granted, the holds, I almost can't even blame them because they're just overmatched. But at some point, you'd have to think, and Charlie, this goes back to what you said, which is if Cal McNair is paying attention somewhere, if Hannah is somewhere paying attention, maybe more appropriately. Like, how much more leash do you give Nick Casario here? Because I know it's a much bigger deal to upend your general manager, but I don't know. I feel like it's really hard to judge D'Amico comprehensively when he's not being given the tools to work with on one side of the ball. On the other side of the ball, he's been given a lot, and you assume that he has a lot of say in that, and so he's probably helping to draft some of the players there or pick up who they're picking up in free agency. But on the offensive side of the ball, it has just been an absolute failure to start. So how much more leash do you think they're going to give Nick Casario in the GM spot?
I mean, if he was a judge, he should at least recuse himself from the case where offensive linemen are involved and someone else should have power over that position unit. I think it's how the rest of the season rides out. I mean, if they wind up 7-10, 8-9, not a straight up awful team, but that they have six draft picks upcoming in the first four rounds of the 2026 draft, all right, a chance to go get some good offensive linemen. Yeah, well, probably not if Casario's picking them.
That's true. I mean, he's also the executive vice president of the team. I don't know what it would take to get him out of that spot. He's still living off that Deshaun Watson trade, in my opinion. And you know, he missed with a lot of those draft picks, too, in that deal. But yeah, I don't think Casario's going to be out. Maybe at the end of the day, it's up to D'Amico, or it gets to one of those things where it's like, hey, either you get rid of this guy or we're getting rid of you. Sometimes that happens in football, too. So once again, we might just be hoping that Hannah comes and saves the day.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it's come down to, I think. I really do. It seems like fair, the optics has been of this team that Cal is just kind of floating by on being a Nepo baby, inheriting a team. And, you know, Hannah's the only one who seems to have a feel for what the optics look like outside of the stadium. She seems to have her at least have a somewhat finger on the pulse of what's going on. But yeah, I mean, to your point, Josh, we may be much closer to Nick Caserio being inducted into the Ring of Honor before we see Nick Caserio be ousted from the general manager spot. Final thoughts before we're out the door on this episode.
All right. Let me try to condense this. Hey, I love nostalgia and history and embracing your past. And the Texans did that Sunday. Okay, their history is relatively meager. I mean, they do have a nice collection of those cute little AFC South Division pennants, but nothing beyond that. Stop welcoming players back and calling it Texans Legends Weekend. It's embarrassing. I'm not going to name any of the players that were included. Texans Legends, there are basically two. Andre Johnson, J.J. Watt. If you want to include DeAndre Hopkins in there, maybe we could stretch the rubber band and suggest another player or two. But that they have dozens of players back for that game, and what a game they chose to invite them back for. That's all well and good. But stop calling it Texans Legend. Just call it Texans Alumni Weekend, because you look stupid or you're condescending to your fan base in the public. Texans Legends by the dozen. Give me a break. It's eggs by the dozen. Rotten eggs, more than not, in this team's overall history. Back in the summer, it was floated a little bit. Boy, you know, NRG Stadium, now one of the older facilities in the NFL. It might need like $500 million worth of upgrades, or maybe we just need a whole new stadium. It better not have a retractable roof, because that added about $50 million to the price tag 25 years ago. So I figure it would add double to it now. It's a disgrace that on a 72-degree, cloudless, low-humidity day, the roof was welded shut. And the hurricane's over a year ago. So, I mean, if they haven't fixed it by then, okay, they're just a broken-down franchise, I suppose. Or, well, we're not going to pay for it. Whatever the agreement is. I mean, the Tampa Bay Rays are moving back into their baseball field, which was destroyed by a hurricane a year ago. Players of the game, I wanted to go, and I will stick with them. The others, besides Will Anderson, Danielle Hunter. J.K. Dobbins didn't break off a big run in the game. And I just think as a no-name group, because Anderson and Hunter are so stout, Tommy Togiai and Tim Settle and Mario Edwards, a little bit of Sheldon Rankins, Derek Barnett had one impact play. Yeah. I think the Texans get good mileage out of their complementary defensive linemen. So as a group, after a dismal loss, I'll go there.
Yeah, I saw Sheldon Rankins make several plays. And like they said on the broadcast, he used to be in New Orleans, you know, with that same offense with Peyton. So he knew a lot of those little screens and you know, how to, you know, notice what they are and make a play. So I thought that was a really good job by Rankins today. And then just my final take is, you're kind of asking, Brandon, what would it take for change? Well, I think last year, one of the main reasons that they fired Bobby Slowick was because C.J. Stroud was the second most hit quarterback last year. He was getting killed. So what happened today? C.J. Stroud took a shot because he had to run and wasn't much there. So he took off and got a concussion. Remember, he had that concussion against the Jets. So, you know, he's had him more than once. So if there's anything that maybe gets the McNairs kind of looking around like, man, Caserio, you're getting our quarterback killed here. The offensive line doesn't seem to get any better, and CJ's missing game, and he could miss the next game. You're not guaranteed to come back the next week after a concussion. So maybe that could, you know, start to, you know, have the McNairs kind of side-eyeing Nick Caserio a little bit here. Like, are you going to get our quarterback killed before we even get to a second contract?
Though almost every really good quarterback in the league in this era makes plays with his legs. Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, Dak Prescott, obviously Lamar Jackson, Jordan Love, and we can add several more. CJ, he can run with it, but he's not a runner. I mean, he's not fast. He's not particularly elusive, so defenders can close on him. more quickly than they can on some other quarterbacks. And it's just the risk of the position. But the clock keeps ticking on when you're going to go or not go with a $55 million per year extension. And I don't want to pay that to my version of Trevor Lawrence, if that's where C.J. Stroud's going to rank within the league.
Charlie, let's agree to disagree on the Texans legend. Look, the next time Bill O'Brien is back in the building, he should be featured, and he should be featured as a legend because the damage that he was allowed to do to this franchise was legendary. And look, we joke, look, Cal McNair was able, he was allowed to rehab his reputation via the CJ Stroud pick. And because Hannah McNair helped launder his image through some of the riz that she has when she does her public appearances. But we all quickly forgot where this franchise's reputation was at prior to CJ's arrival, prior to D'Amico Ryan's arrival. This franchise was thought about a lot differently. And I don't think you throw the baby out with the bathwater, but I think you really do have to take a hard look at who's stocking, who's buying the groceries, who's stocking the pond, however you want to say it, and how effective are they? And to this point, just Nick Cassero has been ineffective.
Incidentally, Bill O'Brien in his second season as the head coach at Boston College, his Eagles are 1-8.
Well, he is a legend. We'll cut it there. We'll give the legendary Charlie the last word. Make sure that you join us on Thursday. We're going to preview Jags Texans. So join us for that. We appreciate everyone for joining us live. Hopefully this was therapeutic. Hopefully it was a little cathartic for everybody. Sorry we couldn't be celebrating a win and a 500 record, but hey, sometimes the bad guys win. See the World Series. For Charlie and Josh, I'm Brandon saying so long. Until next time, go Texans.